WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
The Field Museum, the Museum of Science and Industry, the Art Institute. They're institutions, Chicago icons, really. But have you heard of the Sock Monkey Museum in Long Grove? What about the Insect Asylum in Avondale? Or the Gemstone and Jewelry Museum in Oak Brook? The Chicago area has dozens and dozens of lesser-known museums and galleries just waiting to be explored. Many of them, like the Center for Native Futures in the Loop or the Bronzeville Children's Museum, celebrate cultures and histories that don't often get the spotlight. Starting this week, we are taking you off the beaten path to some of the most unique and interesting museums in the region, and hopefully putting some new items on your bucket list. First up, it's the McCormick Bridge House and Chicago River Museum. That's tucked away in the corner of a bridge on the city's Riverwalk. Reset producers Linnea Dominic and Nadia Hernandez checked it out, so I sat down with them to hear about their field trip. I started by asking Linnea to tell me more about the building itself, because it sounded like such a hidden gem.
We're going to go into a tower. That's what we're doing. So that's what the Bridge House is. The museum is located at DuSable Bridge on Michigan Avenue, and it's a literal tower tucked into the corner.
Where is this? I'm trying to visualize it right now.
Totally, totally. So each bridge has four of these towers at each end,
okay,
like spanning the river. There are five stories, and it's limestone. So the visual contrast is really beautiful because the towers are these light gray, and then the bridge itself is this rusty orangey red. And so just right away, you're like, ooh, eye-popping color. Love
yes.
it. This one is ornamental. So there, as I mentioned, there are four. Two of them have these big gears mm-hmm. systems underneath, but they were never in operation, which is why they were able to be made into museums. So I was really intrigued by this. My mom was obsessed with lighthouses when I was a kid. And apparently the bridge houses had a similar function. So back in the day, boats would move up and down the river and the bridges needed to be able to move to accommodate them. And there was no schedule for the boats to come and go.
Okay.
And so the bridge houses were staffed 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. When boats came, the bridges had to lift. And so that is the history of these structures.
So cool. Well, Nadia, you started your tour inside the bridge where you and Linnea met up with the museum director, Josh Coles. Let's listen.
We are entering the gear room, which, holy moly,
is underneath Michigan Avenue. Are you kidding me?
We're actually standing inside of the Michigan Avenue Bridge. This is also called the DuSable Bridge, named after Jean-Baptiste Pointe DuSable. We are inside of it right now, so we're standing right next to the giant gears that operate this bridge. It still goes up about 30 or 40 times a year. And whenever this bridge does go up, you can actually stand inside this room, watch it from feet away, and see these big gears moving, see the counterweight drop 40 feet underground.
I'm still stuck on the fact that he said we're standing inside the Michigan Avenue
totally.
Bridge. I'm like,
yeah.
What? Nadia, what was this like for you?
It was really cool. Like Linnea said, I don't feel as if when I'm walking down Michigan Avenue or on the Riverwalk that I'm looking down. Like, I want to look up. And so even just seeing visually, like, what's happening underground was really bizarre and cool to see. Like, yeah, there's actually, like, a lot of movement going on, and there's a lot of attention to detail on how this works. And hearing the buses, hearing like people walking was really cool, and just like in a space where you feel like you're kind of hidden away.
Yeah, this is the kind of field trip to send you guys on that where I just love what we do even more, right? That our medium being sound, like you used it perfectly there. And Linnea, you also learned about the style of these movable bridges. So tell us more about what makes them so unique.
Well, I mean, they move. That's kind of crazy. Like, I mean, we're saying it casually.
Let's talk about that for a second.
There are so many of them in the city that they're actually known as Chicago-style bridges.
Oh, really?
And Chicago has the most of this style of bridge in the country, but unfortunately, Amsterdam has more than us.
Oh.
Josh gave us more information about this particular style.
So this is the Basquiat-Trunnion Bridge. The Basquiat part of that is referring to like the counterweight system, which means fall back on yourself. It is all pretty much controlled by gravity. It has a very small motor that gets everything moving, but then gravity kind of controls the rest of it. The trunnion is the pivot point of the bridge. It's kind of the part of the bridge that has the pivot. Everything that's going over the river is going up. Everything that is inside this room is going down.
So I need to come and tour with Josh because, first of all, he explains things so well, right?
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
To hear him talking about the counterweight, it's going up and down, gravity is like a little kind of scary almost, but so cool that engineers were able to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things Josh mentioned is that you can see the bridge's lift, and it's in this gear room. So you can sign up to go in the spring or fall when the scheduled lift of the bridge happens.
You know, you mentioned, Linnea, that this Bridge House Museum, it's got levels to it, 5 levels, in fact. But the museum aims to tell the story vertically. What does that mean?
Yeah, so they really want to start with the river pre-European settlement, and then they want to tell the story from there, how industrialization and population growth and how treating the river as a sewer system harmed the river, and then how, as you're going up, each floor tells a different part of that story. And then by the time you get to the 5th floor, there are these 360 aerial views. You can see down to Roosevelt. You can see towards the lake. You can see down the river. And it's truly stunning. And it is supposed to be this pinnacle of the progress that has been made to improve the health of the river. Margaret Frisbee, she's the executive director of Friends of the Chicago River, said that while river is in the name of the museum, Bridge House is the shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
But they're hoping that the bridge is what draws people in. And by the time that they leave, they have all of this knowledge of the river and the way that humans and the natural environment interact.
Oh, wonderful. We're kicking off a brand new series about the Chicago area's lesser known off-the-beaten-path museums and galleries. Today, we are telling you about McCormick Bridge House and Chicago River Museum. This is on the city's Riverwalk. And I'm joined by Reset producers Linnea Dominic and Nadia Hernandez, who recently took a tour, and they caught up with some visitors.
My name is Tim Hogan. I'm from the East Coast.
Aaron Hogan.
Sue Hogan.
My name is Kunal.
I'm Emily. Oh, I live in Seattle, so this is my mom, and she's visiting me. So I was just like taking her a stroll around the Riverwalk, and I just noticed that there's actually a building in here that I never noticed before. So it just like accidentally came across it.
While we were on the Riverwalk, we passed by. We thought the place was interesting looking, and on our way back, we stopped in.
I'm interested in looking to see how these bridges come up and down.
I'm interested to see how kind of the history of Chicago and the geological part of Chicago come together.
Well, honestly, we were walking by and we saw the free admission sign. So we figured we'd take a look.
You mentioned that earlier too, Nadia. I can't hear it enough. It's free. It's free. That's amazing. What kind of programming does the museum have going on for folks who do stop by, Linnea?
It is free. They're trying that out this year. There's always a free area outside where they do science experiments, and it's a table where people can walk up and learn about mammals and fish that are in the river. But they do ask for, it's a suggested donation of $8, I believe.
Okay.
So in the summertime, I believe it's the third Thursday every month, they have scholars and people who are river advocates come in to talk about themes relating to the river. The next one is people from the Urban Wildlife Institute, and I think they're going to be talking about night-crowned herons, which I love.
Mm.
They also have a spooky Halloween event, which sounds really fun.
Ooh, Halloween at the bridge.
I know. And then one of the things that I thought was really cool and really important is they have a collaboration with Professor Tim Holine. They are trying to figure out what litter is in the river, what the pollution is in the river right now. And so they have this litter trap. Here's Margaret Frisbee. She's the executive director of Friends of the Chicago River, explaining how it works.
And what the trash trap does is gathers litter that's floating in the river, and we're working to actually
analyze it so that we can understand what kind of pollution is in the river so that we can develop public policy around removing it and thus, you know, literally eliminate the waste stream.
She said that 80% of the plastic that they're finding is actually food related. So like cutlery, plastic cups, mm-hmm. coffee lids.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Yeah. And it's also in collaboration with the Wendella Boat Company and the Wrigley Building.
So much happening in this hidden gem that so many of us did not know existed.
Yes.
Wow. Tell us more about what else you can see in the museum, Nadia.
Yeah, so as we said, there's levels, and each level kind of tells a different story about a time in Chicago history. Every single level had like a window where you could see onto Michigan Avenue. And once you get to the top, it's that 360. So as we got up, you could see like we were kind of more street level, and then suddenly we're looking down at Michigan Avenue, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. I was really drawn to the archives. One of the photos that we were really drawn to was an image of tunnels that people used to seek shelter during the Great Chicago Fire. And the image is actually of these tunnels being floated into place along the river. And
oh, wow.
That was like a really cool piece of history that people don't really know about, and especially like water and fire, like how did that all come together?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Seeing it in that place would definitely intrigue me for sure. Anything to add, Linnea?
Yeah. Margaret was saying that they combed through so many archives, the Chicago History Museum, universities, to get these images. Nadia mentioned that you're going from below the bridge to street level at Michigan Avenue. There's this secret door that they open sometimes.
Ooh.
And they opened it for us, and we could literally see onto Michigan Avenue through this tiny little door. And people were just walking by, selling things, going about their lives, and we were able to just peek. It was so neat.
Well, the museum's really telling the story of how the river shifted over time, Nadia, from pre-European settlement to how trade and industry and lack of regard for the resource contaminated it. So what else stuck out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I was just so fascinated to see how the history of the city is being reflected in the river and how the city had been using the river. And so you see like how industrialization impacted it by starting to pollute it. And Josh, the museum director, was telling us about the purpose of the museum is to change visitors' perceptions of the river and the bridges.
It is really kind of like a eye-opening experience for them to see this museum and understand that the river has come back to life from that time of destruction to a really wild space, a place that can support 70 species of fish and all kinds of mammals, all kinds of invertebrates that then feed those fish and feed those mammals. So it's really nice to see people coming in, both from Chicago and from all around the world, just kind of discovering what this river is in this really urban space, the third largest city in the country, that can have this really wild natural river that is now cleaner than it's been in 200 years.
Mm-hmm. And Margaret added that it's also a highly sought after place for recreation and real estate. And so people want to develop there, people want to play there, people want to spend time at the river. And that this is really a story of hope about how when people come together, you can affect change and make things better.
Sounds beautiful to be right on the river, not just for, you know, all the recreation and things that we would do normally, but just to learn and explore and see all of these cool things. How exactly do folks get there? How do they navigate to this museum and this secret door and all the goodies that you've described? And how accessible is the space overall?
So you enter through the Riverwalk. This is a historic building, and when they opened the museum, they worked really closely with the mayor's office for people with disabilities to figure out how to make it as accessible as possible, because unfortunately it's a historic building and the square footage of it is the size of an elevator, and so it's very tiny.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so there is no elevator once you're in the space. So the first floor with the gear room that Nadia mentioned is accessible, and they are working on expanding their video options that show the tour of the rest of the building. But unfortunately, you do have to take stairs up to the fifth floor.
Yeah, good to know. Well, I was going to ask if you recommend that people check this museum out, but I think your answers might be yes.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
We've been speaking with Reset producers Nadia Hernandez and Linnea Dominic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Linnea Dominic and Nadia Hernandez. It was edited by Daniel Tucker. This is the first in a new series highlighting museums in Chicagoland. You can tune into the live show on Thursdays to hear more, or keep a lookout each week on this podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again this afternoon.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely